I trade freight services in association with Who1.co.uk present the 20 megabyte Dr. Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 megabyte Dr. Who podcast number 184. I'm Adam, and with me this week we've got Matthew Kressel.
It's been surveyed, you know.
Mary Lang.
You don't have enough power in you to strike a match. See what I mean?
Rhys Parton.
Death to the enemies of the Kaliach.
Robert Haynes.
Vivian is making some sausage sandwiches. Nothing like sausage sandwiches when you're working something out.
And Kirby Sleepy Sloan.
Affirmative, Master.
And this week we have Rhys back.
You do.
Rhys back.
Front and side.
Very, very briefly, what did you think of last week's, the one we were on, not the Isabella episode, story that we were reviewing, not the episode, just the story that you didn't review.
Oh, so the story that I didn't watch because
you didn't watch it. Okay, we'll move on then.
Oh,
this week we're talking about the Stones of Blood.
Yeah. Yay! Yeah.
Yes.
Which begins...
I concur. Yay.
On the TARDIS, where the Doctor can't put the key together.
It begins with a wobbly TARDIS hanging from its thread.
Why? Hello, K9 of the podcast.
The thing is, though, right, that wobbly TARDIS hanging from a thread was very similar to the wobbly TARDIS I've got that hangs in midair via a magnetic field.
Ah.
Mm.
Ah.
Anyway. Yeah, so...
Oh dear.
He puts the tracer in the console to try and find the location of the next segment. Meanwhile, there's some strange druids doing some strange stuff.
Druidy stuff.
Yeah, in a
sort of
a circle.
It's only a model.
Yes.
No, I thought it was real. Damn.
Yeah.
And there's a woman.
It's a combination of studio and a model, and also, of course, the Roll Right Stones. Which don't happen to have stones in the middle.
Okay. Anyway, a woman is there sort of preaching, but in this bit of it, she hasn't got a strange mask on. She's sort of maskless and doesn't look that much like Vivian Faye, actually, in that.
That's because that's not.
Isn't it? Yeah, it's not Vivian Faye. Right.
Is it not?
You know the lady. No. You know the lady you see with DeVries in the house later on.
Yeah, that's Martha. Okay. That's Martha.
Yeah, it's Martha.
Well, it's not that clear because it's a very small picture.
There are enough similarities that you do think it is for a while.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Well, I was right. I was half right then, wasn't I? I did notice actually on some of the roundels in the TARDIS that they've got screws holding them in. I know. I wonder if they.
Well, something's got to.
Sonic screwdriver to undo them. In fact, he used a real screwdriver in this story, which I thought was quite interesting.
Mm. Well, the version I watched must have been off of someone's VHS because the image was not clear enough for me to see a lot of things.
Okay. Mm.
I posted it on Facebook, but I loved the hat on the time rotor.
Yeah, yes. That was quite funny. Mm-hmm. I didn't much love the hat on Romana because the outfit she wore first part of the story was dreadful.
Yeah,
But I suppose she is.
The next one was lovely.
No idea of style, and she's not impressed with Earth. This is Romana's first visit to Earth. She's not initially impressed with it. There was a quite funny comment in regards to the rain that she made.
Yeah,
something to do with precipitation.
Aqueous precipitation.
That's the one.
And then
aqueous precipitation.
Then they sort of quickly find a sort of. Circle of stones, which I think some are real and some aren't, because...
I just said that.
I know. I'm trying to keep them in time with the story. Right. Magic!
Let me quote Rhys. You've said pretty much something about everything at some point.
Yes. So...
I have.
So anyway, she sort of starts pointing the tracer around, and we quickly, very quickly... meet Professor Thingamajig, whose name
is... Emilia Rumford.
Her. Who is very terrible at remembering her lines.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
No. I have something to say here. I know everyone says she is terrible at remembering her lines, and perhaps that was so, but I feel that it works for the character because she's an old professor, and I listened through that whole section there. I listened to that whole section there where she like has difficulty saying her name, and then she goes on about all these things about stones, which sounds really like professors I have had.
Yep.
Right. No, but she was pausing. She was pausing in all the wrong places.
No, she was thinking. She was bringing that stuff
at some point while it's still Monday. Right. make it quite clear. She was having trouble remembering her lines, but because she's an experienced actress, she was able to work that into the character. So she was clever enough to be consistent with this. So on the parts where she did know a line, she still made it look like she was hesitating in what she was saying. So, but you can tell us which bit she's sort of struggling with the lines and which bit she's just playing the character in that style.
I agree with you, Adam. Yes.
I say we use a mind probe to find out.
Oh, no, not the mind probe.
what is it later in the episode? Darn.
Never mind.
The truth thing.
Yes.
The Megara, yeah.
Yeah, never mind. Right, so, so she's obviously like the oldest sort of semi-companion the Doctor's had until we get to Wilf. So it's quite an interesting relationship that she has with the Doctor and the whole story, and I quite enjoy that. Anyway, Vivian.
I thought the fumbling over her lines was part of her character, and I thought she was just a great quirky character, because she had the truncheon and she was arrested for having it
Vivian Fake turns out wearing her very pink suit. Yeah, very 1970s as well, with the flares. Anyway, someone was going to say something, and I interrupted somebody. I think it was Matthew.
Yeah, her and Tom Baker got along very well. In fact, Tom Baker, when Mary Tam left, initially wanted her to come in and be the companion, but by that point her health had deteriorated, and looking at her page on IMDb, this was one of the last things she did before she died.
Yes, it didn't look that well, actually, to be honest, while making it. Right. I thought initially when I watched this that K-9 wasn't going to be in it because he was very quickly left in the TARDIS, but fortunately they did get him out. But then they destroyed him. Then they got him back together again. And,
I love K-9 in this one.
When I saw DeVries...
Oh, yes, so did I.
He was good.
I especially love the way the Doctor treats him when he goes on and on.
When I saw DeVries, I thought there's a slight resemblance between him and yourself, Kirby.
Oh yes, we have our very own K-9.
No, not K-9. DeVries.
Oh, DeVries. Oh.
My sacrificial knife is
over
there. Kirby is the spitting image against K-9. Sorry, Kirby.
I can hear your crow in the background.
There's. Oh, we have lots of crows in the neighborhood.
The funniest moment of the week.
Who picked up that the crow in the house
was
a raven. The raven / crow in the house was the Kaliak.
Yes, I did sort of at some point, not straight away.
Yeah, not right away.
And that's how information was being... Yeah. That's how Vivian was finding out what was going on with the Doctor in the house.
So they did try and they glossed over the fact that they were either ravens or crows somewhere in the script, so they could use a raven or a crow depending on whatever they had at the time.
Well, and DeVries says the line about how the Kaliak uses the birds for her eyes. So I didn't take the bird to be actually that character, but I thought it was one of her spies.
Yeah. Anyway, the Doctor goes and visits DeVries and sees some missing paintings, a little bit like City of Death, but not. And he seems to be wiping his mouth a lot, the Doctor. I don't know if he's dribbling or anything, but and also he does seem to mouth a few of DeVries' lines as well. But
yes, he does.
maybe
you always notice that.
Yeah, carry on. Yeah, sorry.
The business with the paintings being missing is in part comes from Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes story, The Hound of the Baskervilles, where the identity of the villain is revealed through an old family painting. The business with the paintings being missing is from one of the later adaptations of it, the 1959 Hammer version. And the Hammer films play a big part in the first couple of episodes of this story as well.
Yeah.
Thank you, K-9.
Yeah, thank you. Anyway, Kirby hits the Doctor overhead with a rock. Sorry, DeVries hits the Doctor overhead with a rock. Not very nice.
And DeVries smokes. I do not smoke.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got that wrong then.
You sure? Filthy habit.
Anyway,
there's a cloud. Romana,
somebody
you.
Sets him on fire.
Romana, meanwhile, has left been behind at the circle with Professor and Vivian Fay.
Clearly, nothing was
going to
happen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's basically to leave her there so we could have the sort of moment where she falls over the cliff after the. And when the DeVries uh-huh. lifts up the Doctor's head when he's unconscious, it was quite slightly violent,
so,
really.
So Doctor Who has had two real cliffhangers.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Just waiting
that
for went the,
in the seventh Doctor.
I'm just waiting for the tumbleweed to roll by. Yeah.
okay. Here it comes. There it goes. It's gone. Yeah.
Okay, so basically that's the end of episode one where Mary Tam falls over the cliff. Having sort of gone after the Doctor, so she thinks the Doctor's pushed her over the cliff, you see.
Yeah. In the story, Romana falls over the cliff. There was no cliff. It was a slate pit.
Right.
And there was no, they were miles and miles from the scene because they're in Oxfordshire.
Yeah, right. Okay.
You can see that by the composition of the special effects of the sea superimposed.
The wobbly.
Yeah.
The wobbly scene.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. The stones are, the actual location where the roll right stones are is nowhere near water at all.
Okay. Well, doesn't matter, does it? Anyway.
It's a story.
The Doctor gets
out there. The story is set completely. I don't remember exactly where, but it's not in Oxford either.
Never mind.
Oxfordshire.
The Doctor gets taken
Shut
up! The Doctor gets taken to the stones, the circle, I should say. And I love his reaction when he wakes up. Hello.
Right.
Is that not sterilized?
This was Tom Baker at the top of his form.
Absolutely.
Yes. I mean, later on when he finds the Vries or whatever his name was, when he finds him dead, he covers K-9's eyes.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. That was hilarious.
The interesting thing about all that is, of course, that I can just imagine John Nathan Turner and the crew watching this and cringing. So he obviously hated this sort of stuff, you know, and there's all us sort of sitting there loving it.
I love it.
And he'd be there watching it and hating it and thinking, not at this stage, he probably didn't know he was going to become a producer, but thinking, well, if I was a producer, I'd be putting this bit right. Well, he immediately removed it as soon as he was producer. If you notice that Tom Baker's last series, he's very dour and very serious. So changed the character.
I think that JNT has in his memoirs and elsewhere indicated that that he didn't so much have a problem with the humor. I think it's the next season after this when Tom Baker really was the Doctor and Tom Baker started playing himself as the Doctor, really.
Yeah.
And the humor really became over the top. And I think John Nathan Turner dialed it down probably a bit too much in retrospect.
It's funny
but it was
say
very
that.
Much a reaction.
Because I remember watching the old magazine program Nationwide, and obviously our British listeners will know what I'm talking about, that was on in the 1970s, presented by Frank Boff and Sue Lawley. And I remember Tom Baker being there as a guest, and he was sat there in his full costume being the Doctor.
Yeah.
Just being, he's supposed to be interviewed as Tom Baker, yet he was being the Doctor. So,
that interview is on the special edition DVD of this, actually.
Well, there you go. Isn't that amazing?
Which, unfortunately, I don't have.
Anyway, the Doctor blows his whistle and K-9 stumbles across the very rugged terrain.
Oh, yes.
That's
really funny.
Did you mention...
I was going to say, you can see him being sort of dragged across his right, and then he suddenly gets onto the runners and he whizzes across.
Yeah. When Amelia Rumford cuts him loose and she pulls the knife out, he just jumps and says, careful. I thought that was funny too.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was just having a drink of tea out of my TARDIS mug. So basically, K-9 finds Romana down the cliff, and Romana thinks the doctor's trying to kill her. I'm not going to let you have another go. But he throws a scarf down and pulls her up. And
he throws a scarf that happens to be reinforced with a rope.
Yes.
Oh, right.
Yes,
okay.
Kirby, he does.
You, Kirby.
Yeah.
Thank you. I noticed, actually, talking about scarves. That
affirmative. Master.
Alistair Pearson was on Facebook being very pedantic about the new season 19 scarf that's come out. That it's completely inaccurate to the actual sort of pattern that Tom Baker had.
Well,
and
Siobhan
Galashan told him, be quiet. Siobhan Galashan told him to contact TARDIS Tara, and he said he tried but couldn't get through to it. So that's quite an interest, because TARDIS Tara is the complete expert on scarf designs, and I'm sure the one I've got is wrong, but it still looks right for me, and I love it, and I would definitely buy one of the new season 19 ones. Yes, I said season. Ooh. There you go. That's so good. Anyway, sorry.
Well,
Robert.
That's because it is season.
That's what
Robert.
It is. Yeah,
Robert.
Exactly.
Robert.
I was going to say Alistair would know, because he does. He's very finicky with his paintings. He does the minute detail, so he knows
detail,
that kind of
yes,
stuff.
He knows everything. Yes.
Very good.
Very good. Anyway. I do remember watching the some of the making of with this, and I remember. Do you remember that old VHS that came out, the Tom Baker years, where Tom Baker would talk about his memories of each story? It's really good. Yeah, they should bring that out on DVD, in my view.
Oh, great! Yeah,
and he did talk about the making of this one in great affection, and his relationship with the actress
Beatrix Lyman.
And
Beatrix
also, Lyman. He talked about the funny moments he had with John Leeson as well. I can't remember the top of
it. Well, when they play, when they do the crossword puzzle together.
That's it, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, the times crossword.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, De Vries doesn't last very long.
I had forgotten about that. That surprised me.
What, about De Vries?
Same here.
And K-9 very quickly gets done in. Actually, the stones. Yeah. I mean, they're stones. They don't look particularly stony, to be honest with you. But I thought they did quite a good job with those. I thought they did look quite scary.
Yeah.
The lighting on them was really did quite well.
Yeah.
And there was an effect they did that in which there was some blood on the stone, and they lit it so brilliantly.
And
they glowed. did look like the blood was being absorbed into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I thought they did a fantastic job.
It was
job
being
with
absorbed into, a sponge, right?
I know,
there.
But it looked great. It did look like how what they wanted it to look like. That, you know, and it worked really, really well. So, impressive.
Can I say something about that?
Yeah.
Just about stones. You know how they mentioned about being silicon-based life form?
Yeah.
They're sort of forgetting Eldrad was a silicon-based life form as well, back to the hands of death.
And they were talking about vinegar, weren't they? Mm. And, of course, the Slitheen were sort of done in a little bit with vinegar, weren't they, if I remember rightly?
Yes, they were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. More than a little bit.
Mm. Yeah. And as you're talking about the stones as well, one of the original ideas they had was to actually have people in rubber costumes.
Yes.
Running around.
I love the way they move.
And both director Daryl Blake and Matt Irvin, the special effects supervisor, both went, no.
Okay. Well, I was just saying, I like the way they moved. Okay. They moved in that sort of. I know they obviously were on rollers or something, but it did look really good the way they slid and backward and forwards.
Mm-hmm. Except when we saw the arm of the one guy.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yes.
Captain Kirk posted a picture.
Okay, thank you. I didn't see it.
Though. I haven't looked at it yet.
As I was saying, looks like K-9's had it, but Romana comes up with a plan to fix him.
Yeah, it had been so long since I'd seen this story. I was going, wait, this isn't where K-9 goes into the sea. Wait, what? How could he be dying? I forgot about that.
The doctor finds the missing paintings that are all of Vivian Faye. Not very good paintings of her, to be fair, but I suppose they didn't have a lot of time. They should have got Alistair Pearson to paint them. And
they
then
how old would Alistair have been?
He was still a very good artist at the age of 11.
Pre-birth.
The effect where Romana sort of disappears, the sort of whirlwind, the effect I thought was quite impressive. And the staff had the flashing lines across it as it was.
Yeah, I thought that looked quite good too,
and it looked quite. It was very well made. So far so good as far as the special effects go. And she was very good at playing Sinister, wouldn't she? The one who played.
Oh, she
Vivian
was.
Faye.
Yeah, I was very impressed.
Yes,
there's an angle.
And, so Yeah, so she's got Romana's gone up to the spaceship now. Or no, not the spaceship, to the sort of slightly sideways universe.
Hyperspace.
That's what I meant to say.
You had bypassed that.
Did I? I bypassed
that
it.
That was a joke.
Don't worry. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, sorry, I just got pricked in the eye with the tumbleweed then.
God's sake. Hyperspace bypass. Good grief.
Yes. The Doctor has to make one of his brilliant machines. Now, this is what I like about Doctor Who, when the Doctor has to put something together to solve the problem. So what did he pour into it? Rock salt or something? I can't remember now. He pours something into the machine.
Yeah, some kind of crystals.
That's it. The crystals, yes.
Yeah, that Vivian had in the house.
Right.
And the tea towel is over it to hide the fact that the crystals are already in it.
Okay.
Yeah. In the bulb.
Okay. So they go out into the circle so as the Doctor can get himself into hyperspace. And he very quickly finds Romana and Sal, and they start poking around the spaceship. And the spaceship, what do we think of the spaceship? It looked like a really tiny model. That's the only thing I can say, because obviously it was a model. But they can make big models.
It was inside.
It was what, sorry?
I like the superimposition, though, of things.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Doctor looking out. I thought that looked okay.
Yeah, that was well done for the budget that they had.
The what, sorry?
Yeah.
It didn't bother me. I liked it.
The interior matches the exterior.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. It was okay. Their microphone covers as fuel sales.
What they did with the mirrors, not the mirrors, the windows was good. The way they had the lights shining through.
Yeah, I like that too,
So, anyway.
We had a couple of references with the creatures in the various rooms. The Wirren
Android.
Android.
I didn't see the Android. I must have blinked. Yeah. I was writing.
It's right next to Romana.
The Android
is the same cell as she is.
Questions. So I do occasionally miss the odd thing if I blink too much.
Did you like the rubbery skeleton though?
Yeah, that was all right.
It's clearly rubber.
Yeah, that doesn't matter. Anyway, it's only for effect. So
they had problems with it because if they leaned it against the door so it would fall out, it would push the door open well.
So anyway, Vivian Faye destroys the machine initially. K-9 holds off the Ogre, who then need to go and feed on some blood, which is a bit silly considering that... Professor Doodah was there, and it could have just got her blood.
Yeah, they could have just gotten her. I don't know why they went away.
So anyway, they go off and find a couple in a tent. Again, that effect was really good. The way that
wasn't that
the couple in the tent.
No, when she touches it, and that the whole setup of that scene works really well, and her hand goes all skeleton. I know nowadays they do a better job with turning the hand into the skeleton, but you got the effect of what was going on there, and I really enjoyed that. It was really quite scary. I remember that being really scary when I watched it as a kid.
Very effective.
So I liked
Clayton Hickman in the making of documentary notes that if they were doing this story today, that scene would be the teaser sequence at the beginning of an episode.
Can't deny that.
Good point.
Basically, the Doctor and Romana are poking around the spaceship and let out the justice creatures, what they're called.
Yeah, Megara.
Which then sets
we
up,
are the law.
Which then sets up a brilliant sort of court sequence of events.
I thought they were well done too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I even like the wig. Good, yeah. The wig that he gets out of his pocket.
They were good. I was looking at them to say, well, to sort of see the join, if you like, and they just look great. I was well impressed with those. And I think they wouldn't look out of place now if they created an alien that looks a bit like that. So that was really, really good.
Yeah.
I liked the way that Vivian Faye looked when she was in a sort of silver get-up with a dress and stuff and holding a staff. I thought that looked really fantastic, design-wise.
You were just hoping the top slipped down, weren't
you? That would have been nice, but I say she... that look looked fantastic.
I could hear all of you guys while she was in that dress. You know, what else did you see besides her?
That was nice.
The set for that spaceship, like we said, is really, really good. The way that it sort of dips down to the centre of the floor.
Yeah.
I just love it. I think it's great. I think the look of this episode, the story, sorry, is really, really good. And Mary
Tanner. I think if they filmed it again.
Gorgeous.
If they filmed it again today, I think that it would just look a bit sleeker, but the whole idea just worked brilliantly.
The spaceship looked good. They probably do a different thing, you know, where they're looking at the minds of people, that little effect with the mind thing, which is very similar to to the Tomb of the Cybermen, you know, when they were looking into Toberman's mind, a little wiggly line they used, similar sort of thing.
And, like, K-9's gun would be a bit more, I don't know, smooth, like I said, but I just think that it looks really good.
It does.
Yeah, and going back to Adam a couple minutes ago about the model, if you watch the making of documentary, they actually did a CGI version of that model and it in hyperspace as one of the backgrounds that they used in the interviews.
All right, okay. And what was it
and
like?
It actually looked, and it looks quite good, actually, given it's not the biggest budgeted CGI, and it'd probably look even better if they were doing it on a new series budget as well.
Yeah. And that's the fourth or fifth time you've reminded me that I don't have that edition.
Okay. I don't know if I have it either. But anyway, yeah.
Sounding better, Kirby.
A little bit better.
Neither do I.
Romana gets back to Earth, doesn't she? She managed to get back to Earth so she can sort of get the evidence the Doctor needs to prove his innocence. Then she gets back on the spaceship again because K-9 helps the professor fix the machine. And like you say, the Doctor calls Vivian to the stand because he knows full well who she is. And
everyone knew who she was except for the Megara.
Yeah,
well,
they just needed
extremely dense.
So basically, he gets the execution. I don't quite understand why they both don't die in the execution, to be honest with you.
I don't either.
Time
Lord.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Not enough people to kill two people, and
they knew
he was the energy out through her.
They knew he was a Time Lord, so you would have thought they would have done something about that. But she's unconscious, and of course that gives the Doctor the right to get them to read her mind and to prove who she was. And and what happens to her at the end?
She gets
imprisoned or something.
Turned into stone.
Imprisoned forever.
That's right. Turned to stone. And she gets turned
petrified.
To stone. The Doctor whips her necklace off her, which is of course the segment of the key to time.
Which of course is a mystery to those of us that are coming into the middle of the series, as to how did he know that necklace would be a key?
Yeah.
Wasn't the middle.
What do you mean it's not the middle?
Well, this was the third. Story in the Key to Time.
I accept what you're saying, Kirby. Sorry, don't say anything like Kirby, Mary. I watched it and thought that or felt that you didn't need to see the other episodes. And also, I thought they wrote it in a way that if you hadn't watched the other two episodes and you watched this one, it would make you want to carry on watching the series.
Which, compared to the new series, I really appreciated.
Yes.
I think the new series is far too heavy with its plot arcs. Story arcs.
There's not much of an arc, is there? Really?
Master, that scene at the beginning where the Doctor explains to Romana what's going on with the key, I thought was sufficient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it may have been sufficient for the audience, but I felt like Romana was being, kind of bored to death because she kept saying, "I know that."
Yeah, but that was just part of the character because she obviously being a Time Lord and being better educated than Doctor, the Doctor would always say to his companion stuff, and most of the time the companion would say, "Oh, what was it? Oh, what's going on, Doctor?" But the Romana already knew, and it was sort of a superfluous to her knowledge. There was occasionally when the Doctor would explain stuff that she didn't know, but things like that she did, and it was quite interesting.
But it still left me wondering, how did you get on this quest and what's going on? Mm. So,
but it was also the
fact you just need to go back and
explain that too.
That's three talking overs at one time. Points deducted, right? That's Robert points deducted because he talked over Kirby. Where's my pen? Carry on.
I'm afraid to carry on.
Oh, look, there's a tumbleweed.
no, not you. It was Robert got the points to that because he talked over you.
I know, I'm just saying.
Well, we are watching.
Now you're doing it right. You're all getting points to that now. Apart from Mary.
we all start in the negative. Okay.
Right, what were you going? Kirby, you were talking.
I don't remember.
See what happens, Robert. See what happens.
Now, I for one liked the design of the Megara. I thought they were pretty cool.
Yeah, I did
for too. Yeah, we were all saying that we liked it.
Yeah, was that, for was that when you had problems?
Maybe, I don't know.
I can't remember. Oh, my pen's not right.
For such a rather inexpensive CSO trick, it's pretty good. And one thing that was interesting is that the two puppeteers who were holding the little light things were watching things on a monitor so they could position eye lines properly. So that when the doctor's looking at the Megara,
I thought he did a good job of that too.
Yeah. Well, it's the actors, the puppeteers who are making sure that it's proper.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Good attention to detail.
We established that it was a really good effect.
That's my middle name.
Was it? Mm, good.
I meant they were having good.
Okay. About time we started talking about what we think of the episode. So, Robert, your turn.
How cool Romana was.
Is your name Robert?
No, but I was just saying we should talk about that.
Wasted.
No, you didn't interrupt because Robert didn't start speaking. Robert!
Master?
I was initially, when I first watched this, thought the Ogre were pretty scary. So they were very effective in my eyes. And
what, the last week?
No, when I first watched it years ago.
Tin Dog, be quiet.
And, actually, did you know, speaking of K-9, you know when the doctor was trying to get him to confirm his identity to Romana when she was thinking, you know, something's up with the doctor? And he was saying, oh, this is Dr. Master. And I was thinking, what? He could be saying he's the master.
Is it the doctor or the master? Just,
just the way he's constantly saying that kind of thing.
Can I mention another funny K-9 scene? Romana asks him a question, and he basically just starts processing the information, but he doesn't say anything. And she says, look, if you don't know, just say you don't know.
Yeah, forget it.
Yeah. Erasing memory.
That's it, yeah. Right, have you done, Robert? You're still going.
No, I kept on getting interrupted, so...
I know. So the doctor
carry on.
Reese.
No, also...
adding another thought.
All right, just get on with it.
Thank you. Yeah, adding on to what Reese says, there was another lovely thing when Romana says, forget it, and he says, deleting from memory banks. Yeah,
He just said that.
No!
Oh, dear. Anyway, carry on, Robert. Sorry.
No, Reese was just saying, if you don't know, you don't know.
Yeah.
But I was adding that he said, you know, that.
You didn't hear me add that bit too.
No, because probably somebody was talking over you. That's probably why.
Okay. Yeah, well, you carry on.
Master?
But it was, very effective story. Has anybody seen Hot Fuzz?
No.
Yes.
No. No.
I love it.
Because... It sort of reminds me of one of those sort of stories that is having a go at, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
In a bit like The Wicker Man, it had bits of that sort of mixed in as well with the sacrifice kind of stuff.
Master. But Master.
It's sort of like Master. Also like several different stories in that.
Kirby.
Master. Master.
It's like several different stories as well, in that you get the sacrifice and, you know, what's going on in the village.
Explain.
And then
get, another point
get the hot fuzz face.
Explain Hot Fuzz.
Oh,
have you not
forever.
Seen Hot Fuzz, Kirby?
Negative.
No, I've never seen Hot Fuzz either.
Isn't that the one one of the films with Scotty
Timothy
from Star
Dalton's
Trek?
In that as well.
Yes, Simon Pegg,
Nick Frost, Jim Broadbent, Timothy Dalton,
Martin Freeman.
I object to having a point deducted at that point because I was trying to get a clarification before we moved on.
Well, if you don't know, just say it.
Do you object?
Well done.
Kirby, do you object?
Yes.
Overruled.
but you're supposed to be his defendant. That was a good line.
Yeah. Right.
So, yeah, I thought it was a great story. And, yeah, one of the good ones from this season.
That took a long time, didn't it? Yeah, I enjoyed it. And it wasn't your fault either. Mary, your turn. No.
Well, I want to say that I really enjoyed this story, given the thing that I said about coming in the middle of this series. There were things that were spoken of or on the screen, whatever, that that I had questions about because I hadn't seen this from the beginning. And I wonder if in the day people tuned in midway through like I did, but they don't have the opportunity to go back and see it from the beginning. But that aside, I was really impressed with the female characters in this. I love Romana One. This is the first story I've seen her in, and I really, liked her. And I was very impressed with Susan Engel playing Vivian Fay. Ooh, she was wonderfully evil because we all accepted her as being so, you know, loving and supportive. And then all of a sudden she turns into, you know, the Kiliak. And so I thought she played that really well. And as we talked about the professor, I enjoyed her too. And I can see why the doctor, or actually Tom Baker would want her to be, his companion. I just have to bring up one conversation that had laughing out loud. is when the doctor and K-9 are talking and the doctor says, well, now you've always wanted to be a bloodhound. Negative. Yes, you have. Negative.
And then he says one more thing about it and then K-9 just kind of whispers, negative. Yeah. Just whispers it to himself. It's not true. No, it's not.
I like it where the doctor says is explaining hyperspace or trying to.
Oh, yes.
And he says, no one knows everything about hyperspace. And K-9 goes,
I do.
I do.
Be quiet, K-9.
Well, I'm done.
That was quite interesting, Master? Be quiet. That was quite interesting fact, Mary, because you were able to go through all your thoughts on the episode without any interruptions whatsoever, whereas Robert couldn't even speak a word without somebody jumping in and interrupting him. So,
must be that I have a more authoritative voice or something.
Maybe so. Anyway, Reese, what do you think?
Well, I think that when I saw things that I kind of didn't quite understand, like Mary was saying, I kind of thought, well, that's part of, you know, classic Who. There are a lot of things I don't know about it. So I just put up with not knowing exactly what Calufax was until I Googled it to find out. And it's part of another story and things like that.
You don't want to know too much, obviously, because it'll spoil it for you.
Yeah.
Indeed. So I kind of focused on this story mainly, and just if I heard something that I thought was a reference to a previous story or part of the arc, I just kind of thought, well, we'll get to that at some point and I'll find out.
You're right there, Robert.
Yes. Well, mute your microphone.
That's unusual, isn't it?
I thought that, like Mary was saying, the female characters were very good, and I do have to disagree with her about Amelia Rumford. I thought she was just playing up the quirkiness of her character by mispronouncing her lines or stumbling over her lines, I did just then.
But Reese, if you're disagreeing with Mary, you're disagreeing with me, and that. Sorry.
All right, then. Well, that's Adam, dangerous. I disagree with you. I thought that Romana One was excellent, and she looked absolutely beautiful in that red dress. Yeah. And I thought it was excellent to have go on.
Except for her slip showing.
Ooh.
No, that was part of the skirts of that time were done that way.
During the commentary, Mary Tam was saying that it was an issue that she was having with the costume.
Pedantic moment of the week.
Because that was part of the peasant style of the skirt was to have those layers showing.
And at one point,
peasant style.
At one point, she says loudly to the screen, "Pull those petticoats up."
Either way, she looked very nice in it. And I thought that it was great to have I guess a female version of the Doctor where she's solving the mystery of what's going on. And I thought that was a nice change from dare I say it, yeah, the good-looking young girls who tend to ask the doctor, what's that doctor? What's this doctor?
Yeah, I agree with
you. I like the new Who companions, but I just thought it was excellent to have a companion that kind of kept the doctor on his feet, like at the beginning when they landed on Earth. And she says, oh, I should have known, your favorite planet. I've never told anybody that. You don't have to, and things like that. She just kind of had this confidence and this air about her of they're equals, and she's not going to let him, you know, try and be dominant over her, I guess. And I thought she was a fantastic character. And like I said before, the set designs were excellent, and the Ogri, I thought they were creepy. And I thought that, like I said before, if they did it again in New Who or something like it, I don't think they would have to change much. Everything would just be slightly improved because they've got better technology and they've got, you know, just more ability to do it and more of a budget.
Grace?
Yes?
It wouldn't be improved under Moffat.
I don't think I'll get into that one. although I actually have to say, when one of the Ogri, yes, Ken and Kirby, Kirby Nine.
Have you? Oh, that works, doesn't it? Have you seen any of the other Key to Time?
I haven't yet. No.
Oh. Oh boy.
I haven't either, and nobody went, wow.
Yeah, but Mary, Reese has been into Doctor Who ages.
Well, we expected that you hadn't.
Oh. Yeah. Well, no. I mean, Reese has been very vocal about not knowing much of classic Who.
Yeah. I'd say we're on the same level.
Yeah.
Anyway, I have to agree with Reese in regards to Romana being an amazing character played by either Mary Tam or Lala Ward. I thought I was very sad when, you know, they got rid of her, because I really enjoyed the Doctor travelling around with another time person, because they could bring in any other normal standard companions to go with them. That worked really well as well. Not necessarily Adric, but it was just, just a really, really good, really, really good character.
Well, I've only seen a couple of stories with Romana too, and I must say, watching this, I prefer Romana 1.
Okay. Well, obviously, we'll get to some Romana 2 stories later in the... Dave, you've done Reese, aren't you, you said?
Right. I've actually got one more moment that made me chuckle. When the Ogri fell off the cliff, I heard in my head, he's fallen in the water!
Yeah.
Right. No, by the way, that next scene with the light fading into the water was not. That's just stock footage that the director happened to find. It wasn't something they filmed special.
Oh, right. Okay. But it looked really good, didn't
perfectly.
It? Yeah, absolutely. Okay, right. Kirby, it's your turn. And while you still have a sort of connection where we can sort of understand what you're saying.
Yes, Master. Affirmative, Master.
Get on with it.
All right, you've lost me.
Get on with it. I absolutely love this story. This is of the Key to Time. This is my second favorite after the one we're doing in a couple of weeks. Just really great from beginning to end. Like I said, I don't have any problem with the professor stumbling over her lines. She's not. That's the character. I first saw this in the 80s, and I didn't remember a lot of it watching it. I watched these DVDs back when I first got them, but it had been years and years and years. Because, as I said, my set of the Keys to Time happened to be the original release, which there's not a whole lot of extras.
Kirby? That was only released in the US, your releases there, the original ones.
Your releases were only released in the US.
That's affirmative.
I think they were released around 2002, 2003, somewhere around there.
We didn't get ours to about 2007.
But see, when I started getting DVDs, Doctor Who DVDs, the Key to Time was among the first ones I had. Absolutely had to have.
Because
the Fourth Doctor is my doctor, and these just brilliant. I don't know what else I can say. Just...
Okay, that's great. Thank you, Kobe. I think we've established, well, we can get the idea of what you think from that. You don't know what else to say?
Yeah.
You love it.
And I pretty much agree.
Thank you, Master.
Okay, right. It's now Matthew's turn, and I'm going to go and put the kettle on.
Thanks, Adam.
Well, Matthew, you're getting a reputation.
How much do you, Matthew?
What a Matthew.
Yes.
Matthew, you know that link that you put up? The edition that I've got is in a, looks like a box of the keys when they're all assembled.
Yeah.
It sort of opens up.
Yeah, that was a limited edition that was only brought out, I think, in regions 2 and 4. It was not released like that here in the U.S., sadly.
Oh, you expect me to be able to afford that? Uh huh.
Well, you said you didn't have it. I mean, to be honest, I only have it because I received it as a gift.
Oh, lucky! Who bought it for you?
Who did buy it for me?
Who was nice for you?
It was a Christmas present from somebody. They bought it at Barnes & Noble because I went in there and got out the Who DVDs I didn't have at the time.
So what do you think of the story that this mysterious person bought for you?
Well, the Key to Time season was amongst the earliest Doctor Who stories I saw in 2009 because they were in the library alongside the Five Doctor Special Edition and the other stuff I watched. And I have a fondness for most of them. This story has got some good performances in it, especially from Beatrice Lehmann, who you guys have been bashing here and there.
I didn't.
Well, I got the impression you guys were criticizing her, or maybe it was just Adam, and it seemed like
it's
it was
just Adam.
Yes.
And because I like her character, and frankly, you know, she's probably the best character in this. And she steals the scene. Yeah. In every single scene she's in, she steals it, which is no mean feat when you're acting alongside Tom Baker.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would say that the Vivian Faye character stole the scenes for me.
Well, Susan Ingle.
They were both good.
Yeah, Susan Ingle, who plays Vivian Faye, is really good. And also, I also like the fact that David Fisher, when he did the script, tied into a lot of things. There's Arthurian mythology, for example, and the Gothic stuff. We talked about the paintings. Business being from the Sherlock Holmes story, The Hound of the Baskervilles. I think the story itself is quite good for the first 2.5 episodes or so when it's really earthbound. As I said, it's got some wonderful Gothic moments and throwbacks and the Hammer-esque scenes like the campers getting killed, for example, and the druid cults and et cetera. And DeFerris or whatever his name is reminds me of Charles Gray's character from The Devil Rides Out, which is one of the better Hammer films. And there's some wonderful.
Is that the character he would have been doing a parody of when he was in Rocky Horror?
I think so. Actually,
it's just the jump to the left.
I've never seen Rocky Horror, so. I've seen bits and pieces. I've just never felt the need to see the whole thing. But we're not here to. This is not the 20 megabyte Rocky Horror podcast. So settle down, children.
That's right.
He's told you.
Getting back to the story, I think once it reaches the prison ship in hyperspace, the story does lose a bit of momentum because it becomes quite talky.
Yeah,
I agree.
It gets very talky, and it's all people standing around talking. There's not actually a whole lot going on.
Well, it becomes a courtroom drama.
I thought that was better than that going on down on Earth. There was a bit of a different atmosphere to it being in the ship.
And for a courtroom drama, it was much more interesting than the courtroom drama we had last week?
Yeah.
Marinus?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Dear.
Well, Kirby, to quote Ian Richardson's famous line, you may very well think that, but I couldn't possibly comment. I think overall Sons of Blood is a good story, though personally I prefer the stories on either side of this one. And in fact, earlier this week, as part of writing a fanzine article, I did actually rewatch Android's Tara, which is probably my favorite of this season.
Didn't Dave do that one too?
Yeah, he did that one as well as part of his, the part of the strength of him doing this story. So,
yeah.
It's interesting. We're watching the stories out of order. It was kind of like, why didn't we just, because we could have very easy for ourselves and said, okay, we're going to watch the entire Key to Time season. And that would have taken care of our scheduling for a full month and a half.
Yeah. You know, I thought that too. Yeah, I thought that would be nice to see the whole Key to Time series.
I mean, later we are doing the part planet as well, aren't we?
I like that we're not doing it in order because it's different from everyone else.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Kirby.
That's true.
I'll give a point back for that. Well done. Right.
Thank you, Master.
What do you mean it would be different for everyone else?
Everybody else has it in order. We're doing it in random. Apart from Who on Who, of course. Who on Who would probably do it in random order.
Right. Oh, I, by the way, Adam?
Yes.
Master?
Yes.
I was just listening to last week. I listened to the Who on Who where they did the Stones of Blood, and they had your feedback on there.
Did they? What feedback?
Oh, really?
I don't remember, remember sending any feedback.
Ooh.
Oh, was it an old episode? Yeah. Was it an old episode?
Yes, it was very old.
Oh, well, there you go then. Which reminds me, really,
and they recommended that everyone listened to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Good. That's what I like to hear. Now, which reminds me, we really should send in some feedback to the an occasional podcast, which makes me laugh because it's supposed to be an occasional podcast and it's on virtually every week. So it should be a regular podcast.
I need to subscribe to that one. I just heard about it last week.
Yes, it's very good. But
did Matthew finish his feedback?
Yeah,
I'm done.
Right. Affirmative.
Good. Then we can move on
I'm
to
done.
Some feedback.
Ooh, hold on.
Did you say feedback?
Go back.
It's not feedback, Robert. Who's got me on speaker? Right, they're in trouble. That's a point deducted.
Robert.
As soon as I find out who it is.
He's not near it. It's Robert. He's
near
wandered
it.
Off.
All right, I'm back. At front. And sorry.
Right. Okay. Will you turn my bin in? I don't want my speaker on. I hate hearing myself coming back. Right.
How do you think we feel?
Yeah, you do it to us all the time.
Well, you will be hearing it even more now, but here comes Dr. Phil and his musical tribute to the Stones of Blood.
Blood?
I do believe it's going to be a nice day after all.
And don't mention cyber leaders during this one.
Yes. Pretty, isn't it?
Oh dear, see what happened?
Well,
I've just got a picture from Doctor Who online, and it says Peter Davison and Sylvester McCauley outside the TBC Centre this morning.
There's an edit point. Okay. Be quiet. Something happened there. I think I must have touched the cable.
Ooh, Adam.
Wait, I'll try that again. There we go, right. I'll try not to touch the cable this time.
You know, I do believe it's going to be a nice day after all.
So, this is Earth, is it?
Yes. Pretty, isn't it?
Well, the third second can't be far away. It's over there.
Let's go.
Dr. Phil again with another installment of Adventures in Time, Space, and Music. In this segment, we'll be looking at the music of Doctor Who composer Dudley Simpson, focusing on his work on Series 16, The Key to Time. In this episode, we will look at his work on Serial 5C, Story 100, The Stones of Blood, a four-part story which originally aired between the 28th of October and the 18th of November 1978 on BBC One. The search for the third segment of The Key to Time brings the Doctor and Romana to modern-day Earth in a Hammer horror-style story that is filled with stone circles, druidic rituals, as well as the Kaliach, a druidic goddess of war and magic. They come across the stone circle known as the Nine Travelers in Boscombe Moor, Cornwall. The stones are being studied by aged archaeologist Professor Amelia Rumford and her friend Vivian Fay. Alerted to rituals by the local druidic sect, the Doctor journeys to Boscombe Hall to confront DeVries, the leader of the sect, whose hall is built on the site of the convent of the Sisters of St. Gudula. With a number of different turns and twists regarding the mysterious Kaliach, the Ogri, a silicon-based life form that is dependent on globulin for survival, these are mistaken for the stones of the Stone Circle. There is an apparent hyperspace spaceship hovering over the Stone Circle. Upon arriving on the ship, the Megara are disturbed by the Doctor, a type of justice machine that places the Doctor on trial, while revealing that they are accompanying a certain Cesare of Diplos, mostly due to her crimes. Featuring standout performances by Beatrix Lehmann as Professor Rumford, other notable actors include Nicholas McArdle as DeFreeze, and David McAllister and Gerald Cross as the voice of the Megara. Stones of Blood is, while flawed in some regards, still a very worthy addition to the Key to Time series. Dudley Simpson's score to the Stones of Blood is brooding and moody with some inventive writing for many instruments. While in places it attempts to exhibit a Celtic flavor through its use of flute and alto flute, it's more closely connected with other scores in the Key to Time, filled with radiophonic elements, brass instruments such as trumpet and horn, low winds such as the clarinet and bass clarinet, accordion, and strings, including the harp, and exhibiting especially his characteristic use of the solo violoncello. He uses the cello both melodically as well as to add atmosphere with his use of glassy timbral effects such as sul ponticello playing by the bridge and playing tremolo or tremolando, moving the bow back and forth across the strings in a fast but irregular speed. Important highlights in the score to the Stones of Blood is its use of various percussion instruments, including keyboard percussion, chimes and cymbals, as well as pitch drums and ethnic percussion such as gongs, often performed here bending the pitch up and down by bending the metal of the gongs themselves. A percussion instrument is any object which produces a sound when hit with an implement, shaken, rubbed, scraped, or by any other action which sets the object in vibration. The term percussion has its origin in Latin linguistic roots, such as the term percussio, which translates to beat or to strike, in the musical sense, as well as percussus, which means a beating. Different percussion instruments produce sounds with various means. An idiophone is a musical instrument, other than drums, which I'll mention later, whose sound is created by way of an instrument vibrating, usually by hitting and... Well, nonetheless... The human voice being one of the oldest musical instruments, idiophones are likely its oldest second-place instrument. Concussion idiophones are instruments that produce sound by being struck against one another. Percussion idiophones produce sound by being struck with a non-vibrating implement such as mallets, hammers, and sticks. Rattle idiophones are shaken. Scraper idiophones are scraped with a stick or other implement. Plucked idiophones produce a sound by plucking a flexible tongue from within the instrument itself. Friction idiophones are rubbed to increase vibration and sound intensity. Another type is called a membranophone. It's a musical instrument which produces a sound primarily by way of a vibrating stretched membrane. Most membranophones are drums. Drums can be divided into three main categories: struck drums, where the skin is hit with a stick, the hand, or something else; string drums, where a knotted string is attached to the skin, is pulled, passing its vibrations onto the skin; and friction drums, where the sort of rubbing motion causes the skin to vibrate. Ooh, a common type has a stick passing through a hole in the skin, which is pulled back and forth. In addition to drums, there are what are referred to as singing membranophones, which the best-known type is the kazoo, although it's not a percussion instrument by any means. Chordophones, and in this instance dealing with percussion, uses stretched string or cords, such as the harpsichord, piano, or hammered dulcimer. While most chordophones are defined as string instruments, and keyboard instruments are often referred to as their own category for discussion. Aerophones produce their sounds by blowing air through a tube. The sound is often influenced by a reed, Percussion aerophones are confined to whistles and mechanical devices like sirens and motorhorns. The main group of aerophones, of course, include brass and woodwind families of instruments.
I've been called an aerophone before.
In Simpson's score to the Stones of Blood, idiophones such as the marimba and vibraphone are highlighted in the score. While similar in construction, as well as played with mallets, they have many distinct differences. Both instruments use keys or bars. The marimba uses wood, while the vibraphone uses aluminium, or as in the United States, aluminum. Both instruments employ metal resonators. Resonators are thin-walled tubes which are open at one end and closed at the other. Each bar is paired with a resonator whose diameter is slightly wider than the width of the bar, and whose length of the closure is one quarter the wavelength of the fundamental pitch of the bar. The vibraphone also has a sustain pedal, similar to that used on a piano. When the pedal is up, the bars are all damped and the sound of each bar is quite short. With the pedal down, the sound will vibrate for several more seconds. Some vibraphones include an electric motor and pulley assembly mounted on one side or the other to drive the discs and the resonators to create the vibrato sound. Sometimes, but not in the case of Simpson's score here, vibraphones are occasionally bowed as well. Both instruments have various uses, including being part of a standard percussion section in symphony orchestras. They can also both be found in solo performances, woodwind ensemble, jazz ensembles, as well as many other groupings. Many contemporary composers continue to use the distinct sounds of the marimba and the vibraphone in many interesting and innovative ways.
Dr. Phil, right. Race.
Thank you.
Race, what do you think of that then?
Yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Phil.
I thought that was excellent. And I should have mentioned the music because I thought, unlike several of the other stories, Classic Who stories we've been watching, I thought it was nicely atmospheric and underdone, whereas some of them are all over the top and they use some bizarre synthesized music. Not too, I was going to say in your face, but that doesn't work for music. It wasn't overpowering what was going on.
Yeah.
So I think the word you're looking for, Reese, is understated.
Yeah, that's
that could be one. Yes, could thank you. One. Understated one. Will do.
That's it.
I thought it was quite good, and I'd just like to say I'll have an idiophone shaken, not stirred.
Very clever.
Thank you, Reese. Right, we have some more feedback, and it goes like.
Come, O great one, come. Your time is near.
This is Ian Kirk. The Stones of Blood by David Fisher. The story opens with a model TARDIS, like last week. We glimpse a member of the crew behind the scenery wall. The Doctor takes part in a trial. It's deja vu all over again. Beatrix Lehmann, who played Professor Rumford, would slow down when she was trying to remember her line.
Yes!
75.
Vindicated.
This is set in Cornwall, but was actually filmed in Oxfordshire at the Rolling Stones. Rollright Stones. Although Mick Jagger does look like an ogre these days, he's a rock star. Has anyone written a book about the Rolling Stones?
Yeah, I have. You can get it on Amazon and on iTunes.
At one point, the Doctor sends K-9 on a mission, and he goes really fast. The crew would put him on a trolley and pulled it along at high speed. Imagine the fuss if they'd done that to Davros. The control room on the ship reminded me of roller derby with its bank track. And there's a roller derby in Denton, Texas, called the House of Quad, because skates have four wheels. It took me 2 weeks to realise that House of Quad is a pun. I hate it when that happens. Vivian Fay looked rather fetching in the control room scenes, and I took a shine to her. I hope so. Had she been in Cornwall for 200 years or 4,000 years? Both are mentioned. Probably not 4,000, as she would have picked up the accent. In the Tim Doctor story, Family of Blood, the villains are imprisoned perpetually. And this is what happens to Vivian Faye at the end of Stones of Blood. She's been on the run for 4,000 years with her stones, but her time is up. Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian. That was Ian, everybody.
Yeah.
Captain.
Thanks,
Ian.
Captain. Captain Kirk.
Oh, of course, we've got a few other bits and bobs to be getting on with during this episode.
He barely got that out in time, did he?
Did he?
I was wondering.
That's what she said.
I was waiting for some jokes during the Dr. Phil's thing.
Oh, you got one from Adam.
Did I? That's what she said. Don't know what you're saying. All right, I'm going to do things in a slightly different order this week. So now it's time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One.
Can I just mention something before we do that?
Yeah.
You know how Audiogo have been releasing Target novelizations, the audio readings of it?
Yes.
Well, Stones of Blood and Androids of Tara, both written by David Fisher, have been re-novelized by David Fisher, and his re-novelization is the one that they read out rather than Terence Dix's novelization. Just sort of like add that.
So. Oh, well, there you go.
Yes.
Okay, right.
So they make interesting reading.
Thank you. Right, I'm just going to mute my microphone for a bit while I set up the quiz. Won't be a sec.
Okay.
Obvious.
Oh, thank God he's gone.
Okay. Right, the first question this week goes to Robert, who's on minus one at the moment. Robert?
Oh, my God. Pardon? Can I just say something in my defence?
Oh, here we go.
I was waiting for somebody to be quiet, and then I started speaking, and Kirby just happened to speak at the same time.
So you're saying Kirby should have a point deducted?
No, we were just both doing what we were thinking. We were waiting for a break in somebody talking so we could speak, and we just happened to both speak at the same time.
Okay. All right. Everybody's got their points given back. Let's get the quiz going. Right then, Robert.
Thank you, Master.
How many keys have the Doctor and Romana discovered as the story begins?
Oh.
Two.
Correct. Mary.
Yes.
What colour outfit is Romana wearing at the beginning of the story?
Wow, I'd say like brown.
Nope.
I know.
Rolling in the Reese.
I know. Hey, I said it first. No,
hang on a sec. I only heard... Oh, I'm going to go stick with the fact that I only heard Reese first. So, yes, go on then. Pink was the answer. Reese.
Yes.
What is the White Guardian's full name?
What?
I don't know.
Whoa. Anybody?
Pass it on.
Anybody?
He is
Go on, Matthew.
He is the guardian of light and time.
Correct. Kirby.
Oh.
Master.
How does Romana describe the weather on Earth?
I know.
I don't know.
Go on in, Robert.
I only know a bit about aqueous precipitation.
Correct.
Which I said before.
Correct. Matthew.
Yes.
What does canine erase his memory banks of?
I know.
Tennis.
Correct.
Yep.
Robert.
That was a perfect response, Kirby.
Robert.
Yes.
How does the Doctor describe the stone circle?
Oh, I don't know. Give that to Matthew.
No, anybody? Anybody?
That would be a no.
Matthew.
Okay, the answer is... Oh, go on in.
He describes it as a temple and as an observatory, I think.
I'm not
so close.
Bit, it's close, but I'll go on then. So the next question is for Mary.
Okay. Did you skip Robert?
Robert's question.
I didn't get mine. Yeah, I didn't get mine. Okay. So I didn't realize it.
You got it wrong, didn't you? Or well, more or less.
Yeah.
Right. So
yeah, I didn't get it wrong. I didn't know
it. Yeah. Well, that's technically you got it wrong, right? what is the What is the professor's full name?
I know. they kept saying it.
I know as well.
Amelia Mumford.
Correct. Yeah. I think Mumford. Trying to put her off, but I won't. All right, Maurice.
What?
Oh, yes. I'm joking. What is the leader of a brownie pack called?
Ooh.
Hey, that's funny.
I don't know.
You don't know? Anybody?
No.
It's a brown owl.
It's correct.
Do you know how I know that, Adam?
Because you watch the episode.
Because... No. It was funny because there was, you know that program, The Chaser?
Hmm.
No.
Where they get to ask those questions and, you know, they get closer to home and then they get money if they get...
Oh, yeah, I like The Chase. Really good. The Chase, we call it in this country, but yes.
They had
really
a question good. About what's the leader of a brownie pack. I mean, what were the brownies used to be called? They were rosebuds or something.
Well, the relevance to the question is it's actually in the story. Right, and of course, because, specifically, Vivian Fay is brown owl. She said she's the leader of a brownie pack. Okay? Right, Kirby.
Master.
Who is the leader of the druid group?
DeVries.
No, Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
I'm glad you pronounced his name, because I'd have gone...
It is the correct answer. Right. Matthew.
Thank you, Master.
Yes.
Who do the druids worship?
Kaliak.
Correct.
No, right. You said it wrong.
Although the way...
Kaliak!
Okay, right. So the current scores in last place with 1 point is Reese. In second to last place, joint third, if you like, Mary and Kirby with 2. In second place, Robert with 4. And oh, guess who's in the lead with 6 points?
You.
I can't imagine.
Yeah, we couldn't imagine.
Right, next question goes to Robert.
Yes.
Who did one of the stones fall on after he completed his survey?
What was his name? I didn't write it down either. Oh, I don't know.
Go on in, Reese.
I can't figure out how to pronounce his last name. Thomas Belair or something like that?
That's near enough. Dr. Belair, that's near enough. Well done. Right, Mary.
Yes?
What beverage does De Vries offer the doctor?
I know.
Tea.
Nope.
No.
Kirby?
Sherry.
Correct.
Oh.
Reese.
Oh. Yes.
Who did the doctor think founded Druidism?
I know.
I don't know. Matthew knows.
John Aubrey.
Correct. Right, Kirby.
Master.
What was missing from the beginning of episode 2?
I know. I know.
All right, Kirby first, please.
Easy. I don't know.
Go on in, Robert.
It's easy. They forgot the reprise. Well, they didn't have a reprise from last week.
Correct. Matthew.
Yes.
What does the doctor say when he comes around after being knocked out by De Vries?
Well, he says hello, and that he hopes that the knife has been properly sterilized.
That's the correct answer.
What script are you reading from?
Yo, mamas.
Robert.
Yes, sir.
Whose interspatial geometry is pretty rusty?
That was, I don't know, the doctor's?
No, anybody?
I know.
Go on in, Matthew.
Romana's.
Correct. Mary.
I knew it was one of them anyway.
Yeah.
Where are mechanical dogs all the rage?
Oh, in New Jersey.
Correct.
Yeah.
Trenton, New Jersey, but I'm going to give you that.
Yeah.
Reese.
Yes.
Where is De Vries? Sorry, what is De Vries' Christian name?
Ooh. And that's not it. I know that.
I thought he was a druid.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well done, Kirby.
I don't know. Pass it on.
Anybody?
I know.
Go on in, Matthew.
Leonard.
Correct.
Ooh.
McCoy?
Pardon?
Ooh.
McCoy, yeah.
That's
Kirby.
Number 12.
Kirby.
By the way, yesterday was the 47th anniversary of the first episode of Star Trek.
Yeah, never mind. Kirby.
Yes. Master.
When was the convent... Start again. When was the convent founded?
A long time ago.
Yeah.
Wow. 1912.
Give it to Matthew. He knows everything.
Yes, I'm waiting.
Oh, 12th century.
Correct. Right, Matthew.
Yes.
How does Romana plan to save K-9?
She plugs him into something in the TARDIS, but I can't
remember. Oh, I know.
We're on the Mary.
The molecular stabilizer.
Right. Right,
I can remember when monasteries are founded, but I can't remember that.
Okay, right. The stores are in last place with 2 points is Reese. Second to last place with 3 points, Kirby. In joint second with 5 Master. Points each, Robert and Mary. And in the lead is, well, you know who. It's Voldemort. Come in, it's Matthew. Okay, Robert.
Yes, sir.
Who will do the Kaliax building? Building? Start that again. Who will do Kaliax bidding? Yes.
Would that be DeVries? I don't know.
No, anybody? Go on then, Mary.
The Augury?
That's correct. Mary.
Oh.
All right, yes. Yes, what, I'm on it now.
What painter does the Doctor mention when the paintings are discovered?
Oh. I don't know.
Anybody?
I can only remember the first name.
Go on
James and something or other.
No, the name that I picked up was Alan Ramsey. Reese.
Oh, okay. Yes.
What was John Nathan Turner's job on Stones of Blood?
I know. Of course
I know.
You do. He was I'm just trying to remember what he was before he became showrunner. I don't know.
Go on, Robert.
Because I'm a New Who fan.
Wasn't he production unit manager?
He was.
Pum, as they call them.
Yes. Kirby.
Yeah. Master.
Kirby. Oh, yeah, so sorry. What is... Sorry, where... I'll start that again. Where is Ogross?
Tal Ceti.
Yes, correct.
I know, yeah.
Matthew.
And it's a G-class planet.
Matthew?
Yes.
What does the Doctor need to help him find Romana?
Crystals.
Yeah. Specific crystals, yes.
Master, I know.
Give it to Kirby. I'll
Kirby. Kirby.
Tritium. Tritium.
Is correct.
Cool.
And after that round, in last place with 2 points is Reese. In joint second with 6 points is Robert, Mary and Kirby. And Voldemort, of course, in the lead with 12. Okay, Robert's question next. Where is the Doctor from, as he explained to Professor Rutherford?
Rumford, you mean?
Yeah, sorry,
Rumford.
It came up as Rutherford on my thing. Is it? It's got an auto. It's got an auto speller. Right, I'll rephrase the question. So as it doesn't confuse you. Where is the Doctor from, as he explained to Professor Rumford? That's Robert's question at the moment. Robert?
Mm-hmm.
I forget what he actually said. Was it from outer space?
I know.
Go on.
No. Inner time?
Correct.
What we would call inner time?
Yep. Yeah. Mary.
Yes.
How many minutes will K-9's power pack last?
I'm going to guess 5 minutes.
Nope. Anybody?
I know.
Go on then. Surprise, surprise, Voldemort. Yes.
Good.
17 and a half minutes.
Correct.
Oh, God.
Whoa.
Reese.
Yes.
What does Romana think that the theory of hyperspace is?
You know what? The funny thing is, I took note of a few lines before that. I didn't take note of that. I don't know.
Oh, I think I know.
Go on, Mary.
I know.
Mary knows.
Go on, Mary.
A theoretical absurdity.
It is correct.
Yeah.
Yay.
Kirby.
Master?
Who was the woman in the tent?
The girlfriend of...
Yeah, what's her name?
The guy in the tent.
The bloke calls out to her just before it all happens when she's in the tent. What was her name?
I know.
I don't know.
Oh, then Matthew.
Pat.
Correct. Matthew.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
What does the doctor see through one of the cell windows?
A Wirren.
That's correct.
Is that second or final appearance?
No, this is really weird. This quiz is the only quiz where the only real winner is the person in second place. In last place, at the moment, it's Reese with 3 points. In third place, joint third place, in fact, with 6 points each, Robert and Kirby. In second place, technically in the lead, is Mary with 7. And in the lead is Lord Voldemort with 16 points.
No, we should call him the Master.
Right, Robert.
Yes, sir.
What are the justice machines called?
The Megara.
Correct. Mary.
Yes.
How long is the stay of execution for the doctor?
2 hours.
Correct. Reese.
Correct, yeah.
How does the doctor call Romana to the stand? Well, basically, what does he say to call Romana to the stand?
I know.
I can't remember.
I know. Go on in, Kirby.
Miss Romana de Vratjer Lundar.
Near enough. He actually says, I call to the stand my first witness, Romana Dravatlunda.
Oh, Mr. Okay.
You talked over my pronouncing Romana Dravatlunda. Thank you.
I like the point where he calls her Miss Dravatlunda.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that last name.
Hang on, I think there's somebody at the door.
I can never remember, but I love that
the
name.
Door. There's somebody at the door. There's somebody at
the door. Oh, no, it's the post. It's the point. Nobody at the door. Okay, right.
There's nobody at the door.
Oh, God. I nearly disconnected everything then. Yeah, so Romana Dvaratnalunda, so I can pronounce it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. Right, next question goes to Kirby.
Master?
Where were the justice machines travelling to?
Oh, I know.
Mary knows.
Give it to Mary.
Oh, Mary.
Is it Diplos?
It is.
Yeah.
Oh, final question goes to...
I love how excited you get.
Quiet. Final question goes to you-know-who. Are you ready? Are you ready for this? If you get it wrong, get all your points deducted. Okay.
Is this?
Okay.
Matthew. He's up for it. Right. What is Vivian Fay's real name?
Vivian Fay's real name is Kasar of Diplos.
Your real it's whoa. It's correct. Hang on.
Shut up.
Hang on. Help is on its way.
What is her real name?
Kasar.
Cesar. Didn't you watch it?
Did I watch it? I've watched it a few times. The problem is that I'm used to reading it because of doing research and stuff, and I tend never can remember how to pronounce it.
Uh-huh. Where's that script again online?
I closed it down when we started the quiz, just, you know, to be fair, like I need it.
But you had it open.
Be quiet.
Like you need it.
Right, now, as I said earlier on, essentially, whoever's in second...
Hold on, Kirby is accusing me of cheating.
Is he? Okay. The person in second place is essentially the winner, but even more so when they actually finish ahead of Matthew, so that's really good. So we'll do the score, shall we?
Master.
In last place, with a creditable 3, and I think that the answers that Reese gave to get his 3 points were particularly good, Reese. In fourth place... with 7 points, Kirby.
Master.
In third place, with 8 points, Robert. In second place with 10 points, Mary.
Woo!
So technically the winner. But the winner...
Woo-hoo, Mary!
The winner, with 18 points, Lord Voldemort himself, Matthew.
Ta-da!
Hi, this is Fraser Hines, and you're listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Very good, Matthew. You don't get enough credit.
No, well done, yes. Well done. Good quiz.
Okay. He doesn't need any!
Oh.
Right.
It's okay. Kirby thinks I'm reading transcripts half the time.
That's a sort of...
I said you had it open earlier.
Okay, never mind. Let's move on. It's only for fun. As a sort of an interlude between now this bit and the next section of the show, here's Isabella talking about a story she watched. Right, we've got Isabella back on the show this week because after we recorded on whatever day it was, what was it?
Monday again.
After we recorded on Monday, you watched some Doctor Who, didn't you?
Yes.
Which one did you watch?
The Christmas Carol.
Christmas Carol, yes. Had you seen that one before?
Well, I've never seen it before.
I think you had.
It was my first time, actually.
No, you had seen it before, because remember... You had seen it before, maybe you fell asleep. I can't remember. Anyway,
I had never seen it before.
Either way, you couldn't remember it. Right. So can you remember the story? Tell the listeners about the Christmas Carol.
Well, in this village, there was... this man, which was, I think, like the mayor or something, I think.
Yeah.
The mayor. And he was the boss of the town.
Mm-hmm.
And a family came to the mayor's palace and they wanted, I think, some money, but he was furious. And then one of the family members heard a strange noise coming up from the roof. It was the little boy didn't know what it was, because he was trying to tell his family, but they were just talking. And then the doctor arrived down the chimney. And the mayor was watching a movie about when his son, when he was little, and he hurted his son. And the doctor, his TARDIS was in there, and then he went in there as well. He was going to help him. And when I went, and the little boy helped the doctor in the... Is it to go to the freezer? To go to the freeze area. And he forgotten the passcode. But luckily he knowed it then. And he opened the passcode through the freeze peak thing. And his father freezed every family member, even Abigail. Abigail, the doctor knowed Abigail. And so they tried to let the passcode out for Abigail and have some fun together. And then the next day they had fun together, and the next, 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 before Christmas started. When she saw his stockman's son, he was big and grown up like the doctor. She was surprised. And they went to go in Abigail's sister's house. And Abigail was sad because she has been frozen will look frozen. So, but luckily the doctor went inside and he opened the door so they can get them in. That's what I remember. That's all I just remember.
Okay, so what did you think of it then?
Well, it was a tiny bit scary.
Was it?
Yeah.
You didn't mention anything about
the shark.
Oh, the shark, right.
Do you think there was any sharks in there?
You just told me there was.
There was a shark in there. Okay. There was fishes around the town.
Yeah.
That's okay. What I remember.
So did you like it then?
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you, Isabella. See you later.
Bye.
Hi, this is Lou Jameson, or Louise Jameson, listen, and you're listening to the 20 megabytes Doctor Who podcast. Rah.
Wasn't that fun, everyone?
Oh, yes.
She's doing better and better.
And how long did it take you to realise what story she was talking about?
A couple of seconds.
Was it a couple of seconds?
You're just good like that, aren't you, Kirby?
It was hard to hear her.
Oh, 2 minutes quiet after she was done, I figured it out.
She does tend to go a bit quiet when she starts talking about stuff, you know, when she's trying to remember.
True, isn't
but
it?
She did a really good effort trying to actually remember it, and she did a really good job. She's getting good, isn't she?
Yeah.
Alicia Who, that's what I say. It's...
Oh.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Affirmative.
I think it's about time we looked at... by the way, listeners, I'd like to thank the people who did contribute to the show via the button on our the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast .podbean.com page, where you can actually donate money to the show.
Guess what?
What?
Hold on. UG So just accepted my friend request.
Splendid, thank you. So yes, thanks everybody who's donated to the show. More the merrier. And thanks anyway, but it's really good. It's really important that we do get funding of some variety. Also, I think we should look at some news. What do you think?
Affirmative.
No? Yep. Okay. Sounds good to me.
In that case, I'll see if I can find some. Okay. The Ninth Doctor Revisited on BBC America. So some people who have become fans of Doctor Who in the US through Matt Smith might be educated by watching some of those stories. I noticed, did you see my post of Dave Simon's photograph with some of the old doctors and Bingo from the
yes.
Banana Splits?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't know how he does it.
Yes.
I actually asked him how he does it once, and he just says he keeps his eyes open. Well, surely there's a bit of stalking involved as well. But
because some of those pictures are him on the street with some of these people, so it's like,
wow. Oh.
He's got a shop
he
to
really
run.
Does.
He's got a shop to run. Where does he find time stalking celebrities? But nevertheless, he has got some very impressive array of photographs with celebrities. I mean, I'm a bit jealous of him, actually, because I prefer photographs with celebrities than autographs myself. Autographs can be faked. Yeah. I know you can fake a photo with Photoshop, but...
But he's also got an impressive collection of autographs.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, his shop's fantastic. If you ever go to Blackpool, it's a must to visit that shop because the things in there, the big models of Zygons, as you've seen on the video we posted on YouTube. So if you go and look on the 20 megabyte YouTube channel, you'll see a few Doctor Who-related videos, including the visit to the Who Blackpool store, which has got quite a lot of hits, I'll say. There's a picture of Matt Smith.
Does he own that store?
Yeah, of course he does. There's a picture of Matt Smith holding the script for this Christmas special, which is the shortest
production. Is that real?
I don't know, but it's the shortest thing, isn't it, between production and broadcast, I think, of the new era.
Very, very short.
So obviously not going to be that many amazing special effects in it. I think it's going to be drama-based. But I'm really looking forward to it. And, of course, before that, we've got the 50th anniversary. And I did say 50th anniversary this time. Thank you very much.
Can I mention something?
Said 20th last time.
Well, you know you're going to be able to mention it, so you might as well get on with it.
No, because it's related to about the next series. I heard it's going to be autumn.
Yeah, I heard that, and I expected that too. So that's all right.
Pathetic, isn't it?
Why?
Wow!
And are we going to get all the episodes in one go, or are they going to
be
stupid
thing
again?
I heard we were.
Well,
Moffat said.
Bonus then.
Moffat lies, but he did say. Yeah. 12 episodes. And then there'll be a Christmas special. So it's only 13, but we're getting an extra one this year, aren't we? So in theory, that will balance itself out for Series 9, and we'll get the full 13 then, maybe. I don't know. Hopefully. But
you know what else I heard?
Yeah.
No.
I heard that the BBC were apparently annoyed that their revenue was down because there wasn't as much Doctor Who out to sell.
Well, make more.
Well, the BBC... Well, yeah, the BBC's precisely. Got nobody but themselves to blame with the whole split scheduling they're doing is in an attempt to save money, and maybe they finally learned their lesson.
Mm. Yeah, well,
okay. And while we're on the topic of the 50th anniversary, it actually started filming yesterday.
Yes, indeed.
Excellent.
So I'm looking forward to the spoiler shots we're going to get.
Excellent.
Well, Kirby's looking forward to them anyway.
You don't go through spoilers, do you?
Kirby does.
Yes.
But they I'm not really bothered by little shots of what's going on set and stuff like that, because it doesn't really give away plots and storylines. It's when people say what's happening. You're right there, Robert. What's happening in storylines that annoys me. But I quite find it quite tantalising to see little pictures of like we've got. I've got one on my desktop of Matt Smith and David Tennant on set, standing by Tennant's TARDIS. I thought, ooh, can't wait to see that. You know. Right, back to news. Complete series 1 to 7 box set on Blu-ray is out, which is interesting, whereas the first few series weren't actually filmed in HD. Right, go on, Kirby. I know you were going to say something.
I just remembered something back dealing with the Stones of Blood, if I may interject.
You can.
Interject.
The other evening when I put the DVD on, Fred was in here with me watching, and we started to watch, and we were going, oh, it's pretty late. We're only going to watch 2 episodes, and then we'll watch the rest later. Nope. Yeah, right. We just kept going because she just loved it.
Can I make an addition to that comment? I put it on last night expecting to only watch a couple of episodes and watch the rest this morning, but I had to watch the whole lot. That's the first one I've done for ages that I really wanted to sit through the whole series. So, and I didn't actually say what I thought of it, did I? I let you lot talk about it and forgot to mention myself. I loved it.
Yeah, that's a point.
Absolutely adored it. Yeah. And that illustrates that to be the case, because I was able to sit down and watch the whole lot all the way from start to finish. Brilliant, brilliant story, brilliant episode. I can't really fault it, to be honest with you. Have you noticed I didn't really slag it off? There was nothing I said about it. I usually pick something out of it that's...
You did pick something out.
Yeah, you
did. Hardly anything. Hardly, that was one slight thing.
Yeah, her slow delivery.
But I did explain it as well.
Yeah.
Slight thing.
Her slow delivery.
Shut up. It's a bit like
pick on her.
William Shatner acting.
I'm not. I'm picking on Adam for picking on her. I thought that was a deliberate move on her behalf, Robert.
Okay, go on. Yeah, sorry, I did interrupt you, Kirby. Carry on.
No, I was done.
Oh, right, the last bit of news is the Auton Carnival mask sells for £1,000 on an online auction. That's £5,000.
Nice.
This is a rare Auton Carnival mask from Third Doctor story. Terror of the Autons fetched more than £5,000 when it was auctioned on eBay.
One of these days I need to see that story.
Yeah, indeed. Well,
what?
At some point.
Yeah, Kirby, the DVD. Kirby, that's one of the DVDs has gone out of print. You need to see it before you can afford to buy it.
You can get it on eBay.
I can also get it on Netflix as a to rent, I think. Let me check.
Yeah. Or you can buy my VHS of it for a good handsome sum of money.
I'd buy it. Mm.
Signed by...
Yeah,
that one. No, you need to keep that.
No, I don't. I've got a photo of myself with John Pertwee taken that day, and I've got a video of myself with John Pertwee taken that day. Why do I need a signed copy of the video?
I do have Terror of the Autons in the DVD queue. It's at number 4 right now.
Okay. Talking of stories, what's our next story then, next week?
I know.
It's
Logopolis.
Yeah. Logopolis. Oh, and one little sidetrack.
Yeah.
Is I've been watching the new issue of Reign of Terror.
Yeah.
Which I'm finding very interesting. And this little thing, you probably have mentioned it already at some point, Adam, but it probably went right over my head. But the exterior shots were shot on the Isle of Wight.
Yeah, well, yeah, I didn't know that, but yeah.
Yeah.
We'll have to find out where, and I'll go and visit them.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
For what? The Reign of Terror?
Reign of Terror, yeah. And it said in the info text, it says this is the first time that they ever did exterior shots. Yeah. And they did them in a park in the Isle of Wight, and they named the park, but
ooh,
I forgot.
Oh, please find out what it is, and I'll go and visit it.
Okay.
I hope it's Northwood Park, because that's only just around the corner. Hey, Isle of Wight listeners, relevance.
Oh, no. It's not. It's not on the Isle of Wight. It's a farm called the Isle of Wight Farm, which is. Let me see where this is. It is.
God, you spoiled.
They chose it because of the trees. They chose it because of the trees.
Mm-hmm. Hang on, let me figure out exactly. Oop, up, 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 up.
While Kirby's doing that, can I go back to the Auton mask?
I feel like I don't want
on
to
eBay
know
for
now.
A second.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, go on.
The Auton mask.
I just used the online currency converter. I used the mask sold for £5,154. The U.S. equivalent of that is a little over $8,000.
Wow. Somebody has a lot of money to throw around.
They do, and they can throw something. Why don't they throw it into our little pot by donating.
Reign of Terror locations, guys.
Podcast.
You
talked over my URL, you know, when I was trying to get people to donate to the show, but carry on.
Excuse me. The Isle of Wight Farm is actually in Buckinghamshire.
Oh, I'm sorry. I saw Isle of Wight. I got all excited.
How was the spelling of Wight?
It's Gordon Ride, Jared's Cross.
Very disappointed. But never mind. Talking to the Isle of Wight Doctor Who fans Facebook group. Dennis Jones posted on the group he had two tickets to see Courtney Pine at the Newport Minster Church. Courtney Pine has Doctor Who connections.
Yes.
There you go. But I don't know if anybody bought them. He was giving them away for free. So there you go. Just so I could get a little plug for a couple of the members of the Doctor Who, Isle of Wight Doctor Who fans page. Right then, talking about Doctor Who fans, we've got a page as well. It's called the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast Facebook group, of which we currently have 173 members.
I think I added three over the weekend. Mm.
Yes,
so yes, keep them coming. That's great, lovely. And if you want to send in feedback to the show, it's 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. If you want to make a donation to the show, please do, especially people who can afford to spend over £5,000 on props. That's via the 20 megabyte doctorwhopodcast.podbean.com. Right on the front page of our website is a little button where you can donate whatever you like. And I'm just getting told off for eating a timeout bar that apparently wasn't mine. It didn't have a label on it saying it wasn't mine. But nevertheless, they're yours, are they? Oh, they're Debbie's timeout bars. Well, they didn't have a label on them saying, Debbie, you were asleep, so I couldn't really ask you for one. Anyway, right, so, yes. No, Cora how do you say that? McElhenney? Yeah. Anyway, she posted a photo on our Facebook group of Barbara's
ago, yes.
Yeah, Barbara's legs being groped in the Keys of Man. I thought it was quite funny.
Did you see comments?
No, I'm not going to go down that road. Right, so I'd just like to...
I
haven't got time. Right, so I'm talking of... obviously, we've got Legopolis next week. Shush, Legopolis next week. Week after that, Two Doctors. Week after that, Demons. And the week after that, The Pirate Planet. Unless me and Isabella decide to do something in regards to an episode, or indeed Alicia.
And
Alicia
watched
Doctor Who last week. You're talking over me again. When are we going to have what?
Simon Fisher-Becker.
When Simon Fisher-Becker is back from his trip. What? We mean whoa.
I missed something there.
There's always a possibility that Alicia might find...
If you listen to the podcast, Reese.
What?
Robert, would you like to live my busy lifestyle? No, I didn't listen to the podcast.
I have a busy lifestyle already.
Will you be quiet?
We are getting Simon Fisher-Becker at some point.
At some point, yes. Oh. At some point soon, Simon, when he's not so busy. Well, you like Simon Fisher-Becker, do you?
I do. He's cool.
Okay, good. Yeah, cool. I thought you were getting excited about that. Alicia might be prepared to record something.
I'm excited that excited about that. It's did she possible. Watch some Doctor Who last night?
She
week?
Did watch.
Alicia
watched,
who?
She did. Well, she actually watched the first three episodes of Stones of Blood last night and then went off for a bath before episode
four
starts. But yeah, she's quite busy. She's obviously working or at sixth form doing A levels. So she's, you know, it's difficult to get hold of her at the best of times. But for different reasons, because she's a busy girl. But yeah, it would be nice to get her on the show at some point. I don't even know if she's coming to London with us for the Doctor Who celebration. So she's got a ticket. But whether
I thought you had a ticket already.
Yeah, but whether she comes or not is another thing altogether, isn't it? I hope she does. We're trying to tempt her to come by saying the next day we're hoping to go to Harry Potter World. The studios, Harry Potter Studios. We're hoping to get her to come along to that so she can go to that. If financial things.
If she doesn't go, I'll take her ticket.
That way. Yeah, but she says she won't go without her best friend, so she won't be going then because her best friend's not coming. Anyway.
No, I've only got like three more minutes, so we're doing Legopolis next week. What day? What time?
Probably Sunday, because we haven't done a Sunday for a few days, much to the annoyance of she who must be a
Sunday, Sunday.
Thank you, Master.
We haven't done a Sunday for a while, Deb. Don't call me that. But you must be obeyed. All hail the Debs. Hang on, right, let's put it this way. If I don't obey you, what happens?
You get your ass kicked.
Yeah, we go then.
Ooh, yeah. There you go.
By the way, somebody wrote into the show how much they enjoyed Deb's input to the podcast. So, considering it's very small, it's quite impressive, really, isn't it? Right, so that's about it for this week. So Sunday. So I've got. Fortunately, Legopolis is a fourth part of the story, so I really am confident I might be able to get them all watched by Sunday evening. Go on then, Kirby.
That would be at 3 p.m. our time Eastern. What? So what time?
8 p.m. BST. Sunday.
Okay. Sunday.
Yes. Sunday.
Got about a month and a half of British summertime left before the clocks change.
Uh oh, we better start figuring out how we're going to handle that.
Please don't be 4 in the morning. Please don't be 4
anyway,
in the morning.
Thanks for coming on the
show.
That'll
be your
this
project.
Week, and I apologise if I've forgotten anything, because I probably have. Until next week.
Whowon.co.uk?
Whowon.co.uk?
I looked at whowon.co.uk and it's exactly the same as last week.
But it doesn't matter. They still need to be mentioned.
Well, you just did mention them.
Yeah.
They get mentioned at every beginning of every show. Visit whowon.co.uk where you can buy stuff. very good stuff at that.
Good stuff.
Until next week. Thank you for listening to the show. Oh, yeah. Maybe a song? Maybe a song. I think a song should be appropriate at this stage. Not from you, though, Robert. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Master.
Bye.
Death to the enemies of the Kellyak.
Kellyak.
Goodbye from Little Miss Fun.
A love song to set us free. Too many people down, everything turning the wrong way round. And I don't know what love will be, but if you stop dreaming now, Lord knows we'll never clear the clouds. And you've been so busy lately that you haven't found the time to open up your mind and watch the TARDIS spinning gently out of time. Feel the sunshine on your face. It's in the computer now. Gone are the future, way out in space. And you've been so busy lately that you haven't found the time to open up your mind and watch the TARDIS spinning gently out of time. And you've been so busy lately that you haven't found the time to open up your mind and watch the TARDIS spinning gently out of time. Tell me I'm not dreaming, but are we out of time? We're out of time. Out of time, we're out of time. Out of time, we're out of
Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.
The past is another country. 987 is just the Isle of Wight.